Hey everybody, welcome back to One Club Shorts Podcast. We had a great event on Monday. And I know I told Will this earlier. I know I sound a little bit like a broken record, but Glenn, back me up on this one. I think this was by far the best event we've done. I just think every event we do, we kind of elevate our operational skills. We kind of elevate the courses seem to just constantly step up with the food and the course or whatever. So I don't know if that's just inherently the courses just happen to be ready for it or what, but the timing just seems to be right for all this perfect storm to collide. And I think for me, this event, we've gotten more, you know, feedback on than any other event we've done as far as just being an absolute blast, even from some of our staunchest critics that have always seemed to be like, hey, maybe you change this format. Hey, maybe you do this, maybe you do that. We haven't gotten one of those. We get, everyone has just been absolutely in love with this last event. And shout out to Rock Rimmon. The course played, I mean, as if it was ready for a, you know, major tournament. It was, the greens were rolling fast. The fairways were tight. The rough was thick. It was just on point. And the food was out of this world. I think this is probably one of the, you know, best courses, best hidden secrets in the tri-state area, at least as far as courses. But I mean, we had 45 people around the putting green for the putting contest at the end. It didn't matter if they were in or out. They had, you know, drinks in hand and just hooting and hollering. It was just such a fun day. And shout out to our buddies. You know, we had Nick Delfico there, who has been in the last three events, who's a lot of fun, and him and his brother just going at it between each other. There's that love-hate relationship as far as being partners and brothers and whatever. They're a lot of fun to watch going through. But we had the Bust-A-Jack folks there. So, you know, Mason and Cole came and played as they do their golf in old glory. Connecticut was the next on their list, and they asked to play in this event. And obviously we were super excited to have them. And, man, I was lucky enough to play with them, Will, and they were awesome. And the coolest part was, not only are they good golfers, they were just as gracious and cool to hang out with as they seem on YouTube. There is nothing to speak about those two. They were just over the top, great time. And they are sticks. Both of them.
You can tell online. I bet playing with them, it was even more evident.
So impressive. It's just like, what do I need to do? Carry 280? Got it. What do we need to do? Swing this thing left to right, you know, 40 yards, got it. Right to left, 40 yards, got it. It was
must be nice, huh?
I mean, granted, we won.
That must be nice too.
I only had to play four holes. I'm not gonna lie. These guys are just on point. And their manager played with us as well, and he was awesome. I mean, he played out of his mind, great. But just the three of them was just absolute pleasure to have them at the event, and you know, hopefully they had as much fun as it seemed. And then I got lucky enough to take them to Wingfoot the next day and see them tackle the West Course. It was tough conditions because the weather didn't hold up great, but man, they still held true. They played awesome. So shout out to the Busted Jack guys, shout out to Delfico's, Nick Delfico. Everyone that came, it was an awesome, awesome time. And, you know, on to the next now, Woodholm, September 11th.
Can't wait.
Yep. Going to be great. Glenn, any feedback from you? Any thoughts? Like you actually have to play in this one as well.
Yeah, no, I'm just like you said, the course was set up like a US Open, man. If you missed the fairway, it was rough going, but I think, you know, these events are getting so good. And we listen after, you know, Craig and I'll sit around and have drinks with everybody after the round. And when we try to listen to them, what are we doing right? What are we doing wrong? And I think that, we're starting to get everything mostly right. We've ironed out any kinks and they're running smoothly and everyone loves it. And the testament is like, you know, we've just figured out, hey, after the round, everybody's hot, they're tired, but let's get a cocktail in their hand quickly, drink whatever you want, and let's go down and get the putting contest going. Everyone's hooting, hollering. It's just a good time. And yeah, shout out to Nick Delfico and his brother. They're pretty funny out there. And the Busted Jack guys, like you said, we're lucky enough I didn't get to play with them, but I was lucky enough to go over and have some pizza with them after the round, late night pizza in Stanford. And boy, those guys couldn't be nicer. They are just good, solid dudes, it seems like. So they were great. I'm glad they got to play Wingfoot. Did you guys play from the back?
No, we played from the blacks, which is still pretty hard. It was so wet. We actually had a rain delay, and kind of played through like a off and on rain for most of the round. So the ball just wasn't going anywhere. So they played from the blacks. Actually, Joe and I played from the whites, which made it pretty equal. Mason and I won the first 18 holes, and Cole, and we played another 10 holes, went to East, and Cole and Joe won that one pretty handily. So I can honestly say my body started to break down so bad that those last 10 holes, I introduced myself to Mason on the ninth hole just because that was the only hole I think I contributed on. So like, hey, your partner finally showed up. Thanks for carrying us. But it was just a blast. And it's, you know, you see these guys online, and you see they're good at golf, and you see the persona, but you don't really know what they're like, right? And that's like with anybody, whether it's a, you know, five-star athlete in high school, or, you know, stud in college, or, you know, the pros and any level. It is so great to see, and Glenn and I have been in broadcasting for long enough where you see phonies left and right. It is great to see guys like Mason Cole just be as genuine as they come across on YouTube. So shout out to them. They're going to be huge, huge stars. And we're psyched to be part of their journey in any little way. But they were awesome. So
yeah, they have some, but I don't think we can divulge what it is. I know maybe people know, but they have some really cool projects coming up for 2024 that are going to be absolutely unbelievably awesome.
So thanks to them.
That's another score for the One Club Short community. We just keep bringing in these great people. Clearly we're doing something right here.
Yeah. First it was Glenn, then it was Busted Jack. It was like,
exactly.
That's a big leap.
You kind of missed with me, but that's fine. You're never going to win.
Well, we haven't even gotten you to play an event yet. So Woodhome, here we come.
There it is. Look, dude, you finally came my way. I'll be there. I got a crew ready to play. We're pumped to have One Club Short in the area.
You know what, the other thing too is I do like our new format. So, you know, for the longest time we were so set on the two-person team, and we may go back to that for certain events. I 100% understand the competitiveness that comes along with a two-person team, but the four-person team, actually better ball. You still get to play your own ball. It's not a scramble. You get net and gross, but it takes some of the pressure off of not everybody in your group needing to be a stick and still be competitive, right? Like, you guys can afford to have a bad hole. Or more than like, you really just need one person in your group to really shine on any given hole. And then you throw the strokes in and everything else. And it keeps everybody in it to the last hole, right? So you can come with a whole bunch of one handicaps, and all of a sudden they're neck and neck with a bunch of, you know, 8, 9s, and 15s when it's all said and done. So I do like the new format. And actually, you know, a lot of courses have changed it for the member guests. Even Wingfoot has done this now for their one day member guests, and it actually makes a lot of sense. So message received, we did this change, and the feedback we're getting from that on a day to day basis is awesome. So again, not that we won't go back to other stuff in the two person team, but for now this seems to be a pretty good fit. I think when we go back to two person team, it'll be a call out for the best of the best to come in, shine, and maybe we'll put up a cash or I was actually talking to some folks, we're working on some deals, maybe we put up a big trip or something to the winners, or have it where it's a three event series, and then the last one is, you know, the winners in a smaller group, but they're playing for some big prize. I don't know, a lot we can do with it, but for now I think this new format for our everyday events has been a huge hit. So
don't just choose your partner wisely, choose your partners wisely.
Yeah, we're going to have to change some of our signage. Maybe we'll just like do like, you know, like the little rascals who do a backwards Z.
Exactly.
Wisely.
I love it. All right. Well, aside from another smashingly successful One Club Short event, I think we all know what the biggest story in golf in the last week or so is. And it's not a particularly good, happy, exciting one, but I think we'd be remiss if we didn't address it. So Billy Walters, who is writing a book called Gambler: Secrets from a Life at Risk about Phil Mickelson, released an excerpt of his book in Golf Digest a few days ago. And the excerpt is the following. It says, in late September 2012, Phil called me from Medina Country Club just outside Chicago, site of the 39th Ryder Cup matches between the United States and Europe. He was feeling supremely confident that the American squad led by Tiger Woods, Bubba Watson, and Phil himself was about to reclaim the cup from the Euros. He was so confident that he asked me to place a $400,000 wager for him on the US team to win. I couldn't believe what I was hearing. Have you lost your effing mind? I told him. Don't you remember what happened to Pete Rose? The former Cincinnati Reds manager was banned from baseball for betting on his own team. You're seen as a modern day Arnold Palmer, I added. You'd risk all that for this? I want no part of it. Phil has since denied the allegation. He said, I never bet on the Ryder Cup. While it is well known that I always enjoy a friendly wager on the course, I would never undermine the integrity of the game. I've also been very open about my gambling addiction. I've previously conveyed my remorse, took responsibility, have gotten help, have been fully committed to therapy that has positively impacted me. And I feel good about where I am now. So there's a lot going on here. And let's be clear, everything that Walter said is something Walters is alleging in his book. Phil has already addressed those allegations. But I will say, one thing that sticks out to me is Phil didn't actually address the allegation that was made. Phil addressed the allegation that he bet on the Ryder Cup. And that is not something that Walters alleges. Walters alleges that Phil tried to bet on the Ryder Cup and that he didn't indulge him. I think that's a relevant thing. And I don't know if Phil not denying that is his response not being as careful as it ought to be, or if he's signaling something, but I do know that Phil's relationship with gambling is well publicized, that it's not crazy to me as a hypothetical that Phil might want to place bets on certain things, and that if what Walters is saying is true, whether Phil was ultimately able to place that bet or not, that is really, really bad stuff. And I think we might talk a little bit more about the, you know, closer and closer relationship between sports gambling and sports leagues. But man, I was not expecting something like this to come out, even about a guy who likes gambling as much as Phil Mickelson.
Glenn, you go ahead.
I'm just saying, for me, it's a he said, right? And
it is.
At least he's, you know, maybe this guy's just trying to sell books. Maybe he's not remembering correctly. We don't know. Maybe Phil did it. I don't know. But at least he was betting on his team to win. If you're in it, like, and you're betting on yourself to win, there's nothing that you can do to affect that outcome in your favor other than playing the best you can. So that, to me, that's a wash. At the end of the day, I'm so tired of this. Like, yeah, Phil gambles a lot. Guy works really hard to become great at golf. Guy makes tons of money playing golf. Guy spends that money that ever the way he wants to. And you got all these Twitter warriors out there and they're saying, oh, this is a disgrace. This is this, that. Every one of those fucking guys have FanDuel and DraftKings on their phones. And they're sitting there every night betting on a game. And then they're going to go on and be Twitter warriors going, oh, Phil shouldn't be doing this. Oh gosh, he's like, I lost all respect for him. It's like, give me a break. The guy's worth a billion. So he spent $100 million. He's worth a billion, more than a billion. Give me a break.
Yeah, I agree with that 100%. I think it's a very fine line for anyone to tell anyone how to spend their money. Now, is it probably in his best interest to cut some of that back? Probably. But that's, again, it's not for me to say. The biggest thing that he can't do is bet on an event that he is participating in or the Ryder Cup. So if any of that stuff is true, I get it. There should be an investigation. They should talk about it, however they want to punish him if it does happen. You can't, I think, and that goes true for, you're seeing that in the NFL. You saw that in Major League Baseball. You just can't, you can't bet on something that you can control the outcome to, and it impacts you, the league, the integrity of whatever. Everything else, who cares? If he's playing, you know, golf and betting on, you know, the NFL or basketball, what does that impact anybody? You know, like, so whatever the numbers are, that's up to him to figure out. And if he owes a bookie $1 billion, well, he better figure out how to pay it. But that who am I to criticize for doing that? I mean, I gamble on every golf match that I'm in, you know, for the most part, whether it's for a buck, for a drink, for 20 bucks. It's just, that's where my threshold is. His is much higher. So like, I get it. He just, the only thing he can't do, he is a professional and he cannot bet on things that, you know, impact the integrity of the event that he's playing in. Other than that, I don't give a crap.
Yeah, I think you're right to say they're two different things. Like the other stuff that is talked about Phil would get 15 guys on a private jet and they'd go to Vegas and he would say, you guys should all bet before me because I might move the line. Like, who cares? To Glenn's point, Craig, to your point, he's got $1 billion he could be betting on this. Who cares if he's one of the big spenders in Vegas? Doesn't matter. I do think, Glenn, like even analogous to the Pete Rose situation, I don't think it matters if you're betting on yourself to win just because you can't throw it. I think the commingling of gambling and the guys who are actually in the event that is being gambled on is a huge problem. And the NFL is cracking down on it. We just saw a player on the Iowa football team get punished for betting the under in one of their games. We saw that SEC baseball coach who did a really bad job covering his tracks a few months ago get canned for gambling on games that his team was participating in. Look, we don't know if it's even true that Phil tried to gamble on the 2012 Ryder Cup, but if he did, or if this is something that professional golfers are doing at all, I think that's a huge problem. And the way that gambling and sports leagues keep getting closer and closer together, Glenn, you nailed it. Everyone has DraftKings and FanDuel on their phone. You know, in some ways, pro athletes are nothing like us, and in some ways, they're just like us. So a lot of them have that on their phone too. And I really think the pendulum has swung too far when it comes to how common this is, how the leagues and the teams in some of the leagues are so close to the gambling institutions. And I think it's, as a fan, as someone who's watching these sports, even if we don't necessarily have reason to believe that there is any question about the integrity of the outcomes of these games, tournaments, whatever, it's hard for the leagues and the teams to give off the impression of legitimacy when we know that players in the leagues are gambling and we know that the teams are so closely tied together with these sports books and stuff. And I think maybe this was just a 10-year early precursor of where we ended up today.
I'm gonna give you a prediction right now, Will, and I would bet on it if I had DraftKings or
boom, off the podcast, suspended for life. Sorry.
Hey, FanDuel, DraftKings, if you're interested, get in touch.
Yeah, absolutely.
In the next 3 to 5 years, not only will it be okay for athletes to gamble on their own team to win, not against their team, not something they can physically affect in a game, it will be encouraged and sponsored by the teams. The Josh Allen, you bet not. It will become a money driver because there's so much money in this. The league's not going to want to let it go. The players aren't going to want to let it go. The fans are going to be in it. It's going to be encouraged. Josh Allen, who are you taking this week? Well, I'm taking the Chiefs and I'm taking this and I'm betting on myself. I'm putting down $5,000 on the Buffalo Bills to win this week in a cover. I think it's going to be, I mean, these lines are so blurred. Look, there is.
Can I ask you to make a value judgment on that? Like, if you're right about that, is that a good thing?
Well, there's so much in this world that I don't think it's a good thing. Because look, a few years ago, major networks, major sports organizations wouldn't touch the MMA or gambling. Now, yep. What are they doing? Live gambling during a broadcast with updated odds, and MMA is one of the most popular sports in the country right now.
And if you look at one of the big factors, Glenn, I think you look at what DraftKings is paying all these folks. Like, DraftKings by far is one of the biggest sponsors out there that is like publicly known as far as, you know, they, every social influencer, every streamer that like really holds their weight, DraftKings is all over them. So when they see that kind of money floating around, you got to take them seriously. And then they become, they go from being the outlier to the mainstream really quick. And it is, it's just, to your point, both you guys have said it, you go from fantasy football to, you know, oh shoot, I can bet on the Super Bowl 1,000 different ways. Who wins the coin toss? How long's the anthem going to be? How long is this? How long is that? Or, you know, would you suspend a player for saying that's out of the Super Bowl for betting $100 on the coin toss is going to be heads or tails? Technically, they probably need to be investigated according to the rules right now. But is that the silliest thing you've ever heard in your life? Absolutely. So I think the whole thing needs to just be relooked at. If they're going to be this mainstream and that, and these major league sports are going to pull them in as major sponsors, well, then you got to look at what your rules are too and say, you know, how do we adjust to this? So Glenn, you're probably right. 3 to 5 years, this whole dynamic changes altogether.
Yeah. It's so fluid now. And it's just moving in that direction. I just, like we said, there's so much money at the way these guys, these betting apps are investing in everything, stadium naming and advertising everywhere. That's how much money they're making.
So. Wouldn't it be great? It's like XYZ sponsored by DraftKings. Mm-hmm. No one that's actually playing in this can touch DraftKings. So it's like, I don't know. It's the whole thing. It's such a mixed message, but yeah. Got to change.
On the Phil story, last comment, Kyle Porter tweeted that Rory was asked, I guess this must have been, yeah, this was the Thursday of the FedEx St. Jude. He was asked, the talk of the golf world is this book excerpt that came out about Phil Mickelson. I'm curious what the reaction was in there when you read about it. And Rory said, at least he can bet on the Ryder Cup this year because he won't be a part of it. Which is like, look, if Rory McIlroy is going to continue to be asked to be like the vocal leader of the golf world, I am so here for him just being kind of like a petty jerk about it. Like he didn't ask to be in this situation. He has now had the weight of the PGA Tour put on him. He clearly doesn't like the LIV guys. I think if I were on the opposing Ryder Cup team that ended up winning, I would also be a little bit miffed that Phil was that confident that his team was going to win. Like, I love this out of Rory. We've talked plenty about how it's not bad for golf to be a little bit more like pro wrestling, and Rory really leaned into it in this aspect.
It was a great comment. I don't think it needed to be said.
Of course it didn't.
I definitely laughed when I read it. I mean, it was a shot across the bow. I'm surprised Phil hasn't responded to it because he's always been very quick with anybody that takes a shot at him to have a rebut within minutes. But
we're at the LIV event. Did he say anything to you about it?
He didn't. But I would wish he would have said, "Hey, Phil, when they ask you about this, just say, oh no, I didn't hear his comment because I was in my closet trying on my three green jackets." You know, I was like, just stick it back to him so easy. Yeah. You know, I think some of the stuff I think Rory needs to throttle it back. You know, I was at the LIV event on Saturday, and of course that's a pro Mickelson crowd. And every conversation was just kind of like how whiny and complainy Rory's getting to be. Like he's almost intolerable now to a lot of the fans. So as much as Phil has lost fans, Rory's probably lost an equal number of fans just the way he's behaved in the last year. And that's a bad thing for the game. I like both those guys. I wish they'd just both be what it was 2 years ago.
Tell us about the LIV event.
LIV event. That was actually, I was surprised. There were a lot more people than I thought would show up. You know, they do a lot of things right. Like the music around the course, it's not intrusive, but it's all over. It gives kind of a party atmosphere. It's not as big, so there's not concession stands all over the course. So what they do is like, you know, we followed Phil for like six holes and he had a huge crowd. So they would just load up, you know, little flatbed trucks and drive it to the crowd full of beer and water, ice down Gatorades, sell it out, go back and keep looping around to the people because they weren't near the concession stands. The course was amazing. That Trump Bedminster course is unbelievable. The scores you saw that, you know, we've been talking about, are they corking the bat on LIV? That course was set up like a US Open. And
guys did not go super low. Although Honorbon had a pretty good day when you were there.
Yeah, he had a good round. Yeah, but it was interesting because talking to my nephew works there, and he said that Trump wanted the rough at the beginning. We get 8 inches, 6 to 8 inches. So the players went out on the practice round. They said it's way too hard. So then they cut it to 4, and it was still like when their ball landed in the rough, you couldn't see it. So it was set up tough. Beautiful facility, a very boisterous crowd. You know, I'm sitting there on 3. Don Shea and I were on the third hole, and Cam Smith blocks one on the edge of the woods into some deep, like sort of rough. And, you know, everyone gathers around the ball, and Cam comes up and he's looking at it. Some guy goes, "Don't worry, Cam, I suck at golf too." Now, 3 hours later, Cam's holding a $4 million check. So,
yeah, that guy was
your bad day on the golf course is different than Cam's bad day on the golf course.
Yeah, but you know, maybe that's just what he needed to hear.
Yeah. But for me, I like seeing Phil playing in person, seeing Cam. You know, I saw Cam. He was like literally 6 inches. I think it was two or three. He was like 6 inches off the green. The pin was back, probably like 30 yards away from him. And the dude nips this wedge that flies past the pin, skips back and spins back to like 6 inches or a foot. Not many people can do that. So the fact that we're losing viewing these guys, you know, these great players are kind of lost in the LIV is kind of sad, because, you know, Phil Mickelson's probably the only other person that hits that shot I've ever seen hit that shot. A little pitch shot from 30 yards, 20 yards. It just skips and spins back. That's talent. And then to see even like Bubba and, you know, Dustin, it's just good to see those guys play again in person.
Well, you know, how was the access? Were you closer to the players than what you
know? It's the same setup. It's kind of the same setup. You know, the ropes are there. The players are way more interactive on LIV. Everyone's high-fiving the fans. You know, Phil's thumbs up to everybody. Lots of fist bumping, guys signing autographs between holes. So it's a little bit more interactive than a PGA Tour event. But the overall atmosphere, you know, you can't beat it. It's, you know, it's not a traditional serious historic PGA Tour event. It's just different, and it's entertaining, and it's good golf.
Did you catch any of Chase Koepka? He only lost by 26 this week.
I missed Chase. I'm sorry. Dang. Didn't get Brooks. I did. Shea did call Phil blowing it. We were watching him on I think it was 7 where he blew it. On 6, she's like, he's going to miss this putt and he's going to blow it. He's only 2 back at that point. And then on 7, which was a kind of a long par 3 over water, he dunked 2 in the water and took an 8, and then he was done.
Yeah, 4 over on the last day is tough.
Did you follow a group, or do you stay static? Like, is it hard to get around?
No, it's easy. Like any tour event, there was times where we couldn't get a good viewing area. We followed Phil and Cam for their front 9, and then we kind of stopped by around the clubhouse and watched people come up. There's a great, you know, the clubhouse there, you've got, you know, 9s there, and then you can see 18 and 16. 16 is a great par 3 over the water. 18 is a par 5 coming back to the clubhouse. So we just kind of hung out there for the rest of the time. But it's funny, man. It is, you know, you're in there. It was kind of a long round. They probably should have sent out the ranger to see who was holding things up. It took like 5 hours. So, but you're in and out. One, you know, we got there at 12:30. The music's blasting. Then they do a countdown, 10, 9, 8. And then the round starts, and 4.5 hours, 5 hours later, it's over.
I mean, it was Kevin Na who was holding them up.
Yeah, right? Sure. Like, he'd be suspect number one.
He's got a reputation at this point. That is crazy, though. Only 10 guys broke par.
Yeah.
That was a tough setup. I wouldn't have expected that.
Yeah, it was long and that rough was deep.
And Cam really ended up kind of running away with it. I mean, he was only, what did he have? Like a 4 or 5 shot lead even going into the last day. And
yeah, and then Phil got to the 7. Two. Phil made a couple birdies early. Cam had a couple stumbles. But then once Phil made the 8 on the par 3, it was game over for the whole tournament. So,
well, hey, well played for Cam Smith. Glad the U.S. doesn't have to see him in the Ryder Cup. He made the team a lot scarier.
Well, he's also playing the President's Cup.
Yeah, but does anyone care about the President's Cup as much?
He should just identify as a European and play on the Ryder Cup team.
See, that would be scary. I would have a problem if you were doing that.
That can't be play, man. Holy mackerel.
We probably should talk about the U.S. Ryder Cup team, though. So the top 8 as of right now, Scotty, Wyndham Clark, Cantlay, Harmon, Brooks, Max Homa, Xander, and Spieth. You have four more spots to give out. The next four guys are Cam Young, Colin Morikawa, Keegan Bradley, Sam Burns. The next four guys after that are Ricky, JT, Denny McCarthy, and Lucas Glover, who got a bunch of talk on last week's podcast and then went out and won a playoff event. So, Glenn, I'll go to you first. Of that next group of eight, Cam Young, Colin Morikawa, Keegan Bradley, Sam Burns, Ricky Fowler, JT, Denny McCarthy, Lucas Glover, you can only have four.
Well, I'll go. Let me get out of this right. So I think Homa jumped Scheffler this week, right? I think
yes. Max is now six.
Max was couples that already slipped that Homa, Spieth, and Cameron Young were going to be picks. Automatic.
Yep.
So now Homa's up there. So let's say Scheffler's he takes, they just slipped.
I assume he's safe. Yeah.
And then you have, I think Fowler and Morikawa are kind of locks. So to me, that gives one more spot. And now last week I was saying is between Keegan and Justin Thomas, who do you pick? But now you got to put Lucas Glover in that conversation. So now you got, I think it's a 3-for-1. And I think who are they going to pick? If it was me right now, I'm picking Lucas Glover, which I never thought I'd say 2 weeks ago.
I don't want that to age like the Max Kellerman, I want Iguodala over Steph Curry clip. But yeah. I think there's probably a good argument for it. Craig, if you had to make your captain's picks, where would you go?
I'd probably do the same. I mean, I'd love to say I really want to see Keegan in this thing, but I just don't know how you keep Glover out of it right now. I mean, it's so hard to win two tournaments in a year, to win two tournaments back-to-back this close to the Ryder Cup. I don't know. I just think I think he's got to be the guy as of right now. Unless there's an absolute explosion in the next, week or so, or something happens to his game, which you just don't see happening. I don't know how you keep him out. He's just playing too well.
Love for Sam Burns here from anyone, huh?
No, I mean, Sam Burns started out the season so hot, but he hasn't, really done much lately. And I do think Ryder Cup, after you get through the guys that initially qualify, you're either going with experience or hot hand. And I don't think he fits the bill for either one of those right now. I mean, he's a great player. If they took him, is anyone going to be upset? Probably not. But if you ask me today, who's that group? I think he gets bumped.
He hasn't been seen since May. I would take, if it was between him and Justin Thomas, I'm taking Justin Thomas over Sam Burns right now.
Yeah, because then you throw in the whole legacy. At least he's got that, right?
But that's why I think it's now down to Bradley and Glover.
So I look at Lucas Glover, and the concerning thing to me is he just had his two best putting performances by strokes gained, or rather two of his three best putting performances by strokes gained are in his last two starts, which of course he won. He was negative strokes gained putting in 19 of his last 25 starts before that. It makes me wonder how sustainable the Lucas Glover run is. And Craig, to your point, maybe he's the hot hand. So it doesn't have to be sustainable. It just has to last a few more weeks. But how do we convince ourselves that we're not teetering on the edge of Lucas Glover going back to being the Lucas Glover that he was for much of the last year? It's a little bit tough for me.
Got a new putting grip.
Yeah, it's a new putter.
That's fair.
How many lab putters are selling right now?
Got to be a ton, right?
Both the Busted Jack boys have their lab putters, and they can't say enough about them, by the way. It's just...
I logged on to their site. It's a six-week wait now. It's kind of like when Ricky Fowler won, and then Wyndham Clark won with the jailbreak putter, and all of a sudden Callaway's like, shit, we haven't made that putter in 2 years. So they're like, all right, let's re-release it. And it was sold out immediately. So yeah, that's like, he's always been a good ball striker, shaky putter. He found a putter that works. And, you know, I'm sure Will Zalatoris is out there getting ready with a lab putter now for next
year.
He
must be, right?
Back,
you know? I think it's more than just the putter, right? Didn't he change his whole grip and stroke? I mean,
yeah.
They even asked him, they said, what's the most courageous thing you've done with your show? And he's like, this is it, like to change my putting grip halfway through the season and, you know, and trust the fact that it's going to work, and it has. He's 100% right. That's a ballsy move.
Well, I'm mad that I didn't invent that, because I've always been a big proponent of standing the shaft up as straight as you can and just going back and through with a square. Don't, you know, I'm not Ben Crenshaw. I'm not taking it way inside and, you know, and then back to the inside. The easiest putting stroke in the world is just the pendulum, you know, straight back, straight through. And that's what this thing is designed to do. The shaft angle, the limit, I think, for the USGA is 80 degrees. And they say they put it at 79.5, just in case you're playing in a tournament, someone calls you out that looks the angle looks too upright. It's brilliant. So that's, it's by far the most upright putter that's in mass release. So that's why I think you've seen a lot of guys go into it. And to me, I'm intrigued. Like, I want to try one, you know.
Are you like a center shafted long putter guy?
I'm a center shafted 35 inch putter now.
Okay.
But I would do that. But mine's a Scotty Cameron. So the angle probably at like 69 degrees, something like that. Get it like 10 degrees more up. And now because I'm a straight back, straight through.
Yeah.
That's even over the ball and more straight back, straight through.
And you're a mallet guy then, I assume?
Yep, mallet guy. Used to be a big guy my whole life, but then switched to mallets in the last 10 years.
Have you experimented at all with the non-anchored longer putters?
Well, I'm a tinkerer, Will, so I'm always like extending things, shortening. So all long split grips and things like that. I'm always trying, and that made sense. And this company, not only they sort of embrace that, get it as vertical as you can, so it's straight back, straight through. They're just good looking putters. I mean, they're smart. Yeah. Like 12 different colors on the heads, different shaft colors, different grip colors. It's brilliant marketing, and then you get those in the hands of guys who now all of a sudden are winning. That company's got to be taken off now. Pretty cool.
So just for reference, Will, Glenn is also pissed that he didn't invent the wheel. He didn't invent Braille. Also pissed that he really didn't invent the John Daly, because just add the putter to that list.
I did invent the hybrid. I took a 5-wood, tiny little TaylorMade 5-wood head and put a 3-iron shaft in it back in 1990, before hybrids were ever out.
Will, just nod your head and smile. I mean, it doesn't get better. So, yep.
And rollerblades. I invented rollerblades.
Yep.
You invented awesome. The hybrid and rollerblades.
Yep. Okay. Yep. My garage in Ohio, when I was, you know, 10-year-old hockey player, I had like the roller skates with the metal wheels and the key to adjust the length. And I took 2 wheels off, and then I went like that. I was like, if only I'd thought to put the wheels underneath my feet.
His best friend.
Rollerblades.
I mean, it's a lonely life out in Ohio.
Cow tipping and rollerblades. That's what we do.
Yeah.
Well, that's the title of this episode now. Cow tipping and rollerblades.
That's what Ohio does.
Those are my two favorite things. Back when I lived in the Midwest, that's what I was all about. Time to talk a little ball.
Yeah, we have we've got a special guest here today. We're hosted by or joined with by Jack Schneider, our NFL expert, and Will's going to throw a little top 5 questions of the week. What we think about certain teams, where are people going, what's going to happen, and maybe some predictions for a couple divisions. Don't let Glenn skew your judgment and push you towards the Bills for every answer, because he's highly opinionated.
All right, Jack. Well,
Will's our resident expert, Jack, so he's going to ask you, and you just need to answer accordingly. Jack, say hi to the audience.
Hello.
Jack, we got to start with 2 huge moves in the AFC East. Dalvin Cook is on the Jets now. Zeke's a Patriot. How does that affect the competitive balance in that division? Obviously, your Bills are the favorites, or at least they were until this week. What do those moves change?
Well, the Jets, I think, are going to give the Bills some competition, but I don't think the Patriots will have much hope for Zeke, because I think he's kind of down and it's not his comeback season. But Dalvin Cook might work well with Aaron Rodgers, Garrett Wilson. That offense is probably going to be very powerful.
Are you telling me Zeke's cooked?
Yeah.
Man. See, I'm doing some motivated reasoning here. Grew up a Patriots fan. I'm so out on Mac Jones. I need them to put as good a team as possible around him so that nobody else could possibly be the problem, and they realize they need to get rid of him. So if Zeke's cooked, but they think he's good, that's fine with me. All right, Jack, I know that your dad couldn't convince you to be a Giants fan, but I just had my fantasy draft this week, and I picked Giants wide receiver draft pick out of Tennessee, Jalen Hyatt, with the last pick in my draft. Am I smart or dumb?
That's smart. I think he's going to be an all-star. Maybe not this rookie year, but he's going to turn into something really good.
Is that kind of an all-star?
He's fast, and he can move. And I've seen him catch on those practice savings. I think he's going to turn out really well.
Love it. That's exactly the answer I was hoping for. All right. Another guy I picked, probably someone you're a little bit of a bigger fan of, Gabe Davis. I thought he was really good last year. I'm looking for him to have the same season, maybe even better. Am I crazy? Is he going to get overshadowed, or did I make a good pick?
Well, it depends on what round you took him.
I took him pretty late.
All right. Then I think it's a good decision. Because Josh Allen usually uses all of his targets, even though Stephon Diggs is his main target. He also gets the ball to everyone. But I think Gabe Davis will have a little bit above mid-season, and I think he'll turn out like 15 points a game.
That works for me.
Oh, you'll take that, 15 points?
Yeah. If I can get 15 points a game out of Gabe Davis, I will feel like a very smart person. Jack, we can talk fantasy. We can talk Gabe Davis. We can talk Zeke Elliott and Dalvin Cook. But at the end of the day, only one thing matters. That's who's raising the Lombardi Trophy at the end of the year. So I want you today, August 16th, to give me your pick to win the AFC, your pick to win the NFC, and your pick to win the Super Bowl. I know you've thought about this.
I think that the Bills and the Chiefs will both fall just short of the AFC, and the Bengals will win the AFC.
Whoa.
And the NFC. And then I think it's either the 49ers or it's hard because the Eagles might be good, but I don't know if they'll be the same as last year. So I'll say the 49ers versus the Bengals. Bengals win the Super Bowl.
Boom!
Oh,
wow. See, I really thought you were going to pick the Bills. You know what? I think you get credit for your objectivity. I thought you were just going to be a Bills homer. You've clearly thought about this. I love it. Craig, we're going to have him come back and give us some more football insights. This is good stuff.
Yeah, especially when the season starts. This kid's all over it.
In my defense, I think the Bills are going to have a rebuild season. And then in 2024 to 2025 is our season.
He's calling a shot a year in advance.
I don't know if I'm going to be around that long.
Glenn has gone total gloom and doom. Not only are the Bills not going to win the Super Bowl, he may not be around in 2024. I don't know what just happened. What a turbulent event.
In a great mood.
Good job, buddy. That was great. We now have officially the new smartest person on the podcast.
We were looking for any smart person to be on the podcast for like 50 episodes now.
So we've finally
got one.
No doubt.
So, I mean, Bills-Jets, the evening of the Woodholm event.
Yeah.
That's, are we just, we're just chugging straight through?
I think we're going to have.
Glenn and I are going to be there a night early, so we may have to find a place to hunker down and, watch. So, yeah. It's going to be a good one.
Little one club short get together.
That's a good day. We're home and then Bills, Jets. That's a good day.
That is a strong, strong offering out of the One Club Short crew. All right, so Craig, Woodholm's up next. People want to play. What do they need to be doing?
Yeah, you got to go to oneclubshort.com. It's the easiest way to register. And, you know, if there's any questions or concerns or anything you want to know, you know, from us directly, shoot us a note on Instagram. We're actually getting a lot of that recently, Facebook or Instagram. We can help you out with anything you need. You know, if you're looking for a partner, we can hook you up with a couple of singles that are coming. But don't hesitate. You know, Will and I were going back and forth, and I know we show a lot of really good golfers on our, you know, feed, and you know, I can't emphasize enough that these events are made for everybody. I mean, it is truly one of the few sports that you can have somebody that is darn near close to going pro and someone that is so average at the game still love it and still be competitive in the same type of event. We really cater to all, and it's just as fun for everybody, to be honest with you, especially with this new format. And if you come as a double, we try to partner up with folks that are a little bit better or a little bit, you know, to, you know, a little bit worse, maybe, to kind of get the groups evened out as much as we can. So don't be shy. Come to an event, try it out for yourself. I can almost guarantee you will have a good time. So Woodholm is an absolute gorgeous club. Will, you know more about it than we do. We've got a lot of references for this place, and everyone that's gone down absolutely loves it. But Will, this is closer to your hometown, so you know more about this than we do even. Am I lying? It's phenomenal.
No, you nailed it. I mean, I was out the other night with some friends, and one guy who is a member at Baltimore Country Club who was going down to play Robert Trent Jones the next day was telling me how he can't wait to play Woodholm, how he hears nothing but great things about it, how, you know, what a phenomenal course it is. And we've said this about the places in the Northeast where One Club Short has hosted events, and it's holding true for here in the Mid-Atlantic as well. There is so much good golf in these areas that you either wouldn't know existed or wouldn't be able to play just on a whim. And Woodholm absolutely falls into that category. I mean, the people who play the brand name courses down here are super excited about the fact that we're going to a place like Woodholm. So I couldn't be more pumped. I'm glad One Club Short is coming down this way. I know that we've got some people really pumped down here for it, and I think it's going to be a great time.
And North East golf in September, October is probably some of the best in the world.
So as good as it gets.
You got to come, you know, you got to see it to believe it sometimes. And, you know, we had folks come from Dallas, from Florida, from, you know, from Virginia, down from Vermont to our last event. And, you know, don't be afraid to travel. Get in the car. It is worth it. It is a fantastic, fantastic event, and you will not be disappointed. So come on down, try it out. Hit us up on oneclubshort.com to register. And then any questions, concerns, whatever, reach out to us on Instagram, you know, shoot us a direct message. We'll get back to you as soon as we can.
Glenn, any parting shots before we wrap this one up, or are you still reeling from Jack condemning the Bills?
Rio's barking like crazy. He's all mad. Now he heard that. He's all mad. Two things: Patrick Cantlay will win the BMW Championship. Just okay. There. And I finally played well at Rockrim, and I shot a very easy 73 that could have been 68-ish.
67. Let's go!
So I had a ton of 15 feet and in birdie putts, and I only made two.
So hey, those are going to start dropping. I love that.
Yep.
Craig, anything else before we wrap up?
No, can't wait to see everybody. I want to thank everyone again for coming to the event on Monday. Thank you to all the great sponsors, you know, Conceal, Compass, Vineyard Vine, Jameson. And by the way, our partnership with Backswing Golf has been so much fun. These ladies come and you know, the majority of the money that's raised for them for the Beat the Pro goes to these ladies that are trying to make it on the LPGA Tour. And they have all been spectacular. They make that par three so much fun because they talk a little trash. They get you excited about it. Almost every group, you know, goes in and try to beat them. And it's very rare that they actually get beat. So Super excited about working with them going forward. But no, it's just looking forward to meeting a whole new bunch of folks in Maryland in a month, so, or 3 weeks.
Awesome. All right. So as Craig said, if you want to know anything about dates, courses, membership, registration, that's oneclubshort.com. If you want to keep up with us, follow us, or get in touch with us, we are at One Club Short on Instagram. You can also find us on Twitter, where we're at One Club Short. And then the number one podcast is available wherever you get your podcast, with the added bonus of video if you are listening on Spotify. And the whole video podcast goes up on YouTube, where we're at One Club Short Pod. That does it for this episode. We will be back same time, same place next week to recap round two of the FedEx Cup playoffs and probably consult Jack for all of his NFL knowledge once again. Until then, thanks everyone for listening.